Yes. What else is new?
Yeah. She's a good letter for your stress.
Let's see after any other problems.
Very targeted.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Knowing about it's like my son, is different than me.
Yeah.
I've learned that about most things
before.
Right.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's,
my brother is like, oh my gosh, I'm so sick all the time.
Kierkegaard said about anxiety.
That's why my son
that's my position almost everything.
Exactly. But
Gelda was
and he said and it was actually a small family daycare with kids, which is great. And he would just put your daughter's not call your son would help you.
That
was great.
That
university
trust. Well, at least that had to be passed around.
You can
try
to tell them.
Are they for me?
If you don't want them,
okay.
Usually, people go on separate.
I send it to the easier response to staff.
Yeah.
It's
right.
I came down here to work. I was clearly one day. I haven't seen somebody here.
Well, I guess it's time. Wow. We get done.
He has no idea either.
Okay.
You know.
So good
so
to see you, Joe.
So I guess
we
physiological. Physiological.
Yeah.
It's hard to separate this from
anxiety.
Don't you think there was an unusual number of
cognitions to tell us why
names got this year?
Yes.
And is that because there's more money?
Why is this happening?
I think this division director is trying to do right. I think she's trying
that's
to do
what
the
we
right thing.
Professionals refer
I think
to as
self-medication. This year and won't be there next year. So she's looking at a
very
good for next year, but still doing the right thing.
Well,
you
know, it's okay. Okay,
my son's on the list.
We have
so
much alcohol.
Yeah,
it's, you know.
Oh,
yeah.
I didn't have a natural.
Yeah,
you
know,
I
And then finding
yeah,
then there's finding right.
Well, I'm
well,
good at that.
Ready? Yeah. I wanted to sell this. And you have a pile of
oh,
microphones.
We're not being heard.
Could you land?
Good. How's it going? All the water.
Susan Fowler here. Van Nelson
here.
Anthony Mauer. Wayne Lincia
here.
Kyle Patterson.
Kyle's participating remotely.
Kyle?
Yes, I'm here.
Julian Rappaport?
Here.
James Springville. John Paul Joachim?
Here.
Joe Momosaki?
Here. We will look at gender.
So my suggestion, even though we're mostly in person, is that because technically this is a remote meeting, do a roll call.
So, Matt Housen?
Yes.
Daphne Mauer? Lynn Plincia?
Yes.
Kyle Patterson?
Yes.
Julian Rappaport?
Here.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. John Paul Yoakim?
Yes.
Susan Ballard?
Yes.
John Lamasaki?
Yes. Do we have a citizen input? Anybody remotely?
We do have a number of people participating remotely. If you would like to give public input, I think this is going to work.
So we'll move on. So I'll make the comments I would like to make. At the last meeting, we did not have an acknowledgement for the passing of Jonathan Westfield. I knew Jonathan and I knew his family quite well. And it occurred to me that we did not recognize the director of the U.S. Assistant Center who passed away. He was a local police officer. He was a board of Parkland College. And Jonathan Wilberditz. He was a father and active community member. And okay, yeah, thank you.
So I think I'll just make some technical comments because they're called for. Apparently, the governor's emergency order, that executive order, which relaxed some provisions of the Open Meetings Act, has not expired. It does not expire until Friday. So we could have done this meeting fully remotely, but I didn't find this out until last night. So, or maybe it was the night before, and I have started a conversation with the state attorney's office, and they will let me know when they learn, you know, Friday there may actually be another extension or changes to the rules. So the most important thing we need to do between Friday and Monday is let you all know what we're doing next Wednesday. Because Wednesday is either an in-person meeting of both boards in this room, which is 14 people plus myself and any public, or it's fully remote. And we'll need to post that within 48 hours of the meeting. So that's really important, and we will keep in touch with you on that. And apologize for not realizing that we could have done it remotely, but it's really nice to see you all in person. And we're testing some new technology. The connection was a little bit unstable this morning, and the audio was confusing for people on the Zoom part. So if you are talking, give it a few seconds to find you. And we should also be careful not to talk over each other because it gets really confusing then. So I think with that, there is an agenda on your table for next week's study session. And then there are some other materials that either relate to this board packet or there's an expo hand sanitizer. And then there's a little announcement of a contest for Ebert Fest. And you can take as much of that as you want. And if you leave it behind, I'll recycle it. Find someone else who's interested.
Yeah.
So I think that's all I should say.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's get into new business. Evaluation. Page 4-13. Several new folks we have to go. Were you here when they came in and spoke to us, John?
I don't remember.
Probably just four of us at me. So you guys have any questions about this background? This?
So I actually did have a question. And thank you, Lynn, for responding last night. I don't respond to my boards at 1 o'clock at night, so I really appreciate that.
So,
the one question I had was as I was looking through the proposal, and Lyndon sent me last year's report, how they help guide the actual adjustments, taking the evaluation and putting that into practice. It seemed a lot in the report that was just listed as kind of a next step. And then similarly, and this was, I think it was two of the points out of the Palace Committee mentioned using the evaluation to make adjustments and change. And to me, that's the most important part of this, because data and evaluations are wonderful, but it has to inform programmatic decisions. And it I didn't see it really that highlighted very much in last year's report and in this proposal. So whether it be somebody from the proposal or one of the other board members who has more background.
Good.
So there were, Tom Moore and I were both on the evaluation committee meeting with those folks. So at the last meeting, which in which they were speaking to us about where they're going, that's exactly the topic that they intend to address now. So okay. You're right on. I think you're right. That's my understanding. It's a big part of what they want to talk about. So that's a simple answer, but I think they understand what you're saying.
Okay.
If I could just note that, you know, in the beginning, we wanted an evaluation of some of the programs because we just had no way to assess if there was an impact. And the way in which the reports were written, you only knew who was served and how many, and not what happened from the services. And so they began the whole process of helping agencies develop logic models so that they could begin to identify resources to short-term, intermediate, long-term outcomes. And I think that was a struggle for some of the agencies that had never had their fire or been exposed to that kind of evaluation or accountability. So I think it's really crucial now that we're in, what is it, the fifth or sixth year, seventh year, that they've had enough experience that we should have accountability data. And the price of the support has gone up over time, as does everything. And so for $86,000, I want to know that the agencies that are participating really are making adjustments. So I support that concern.
I have a question on page 9 and 10 about the staff, and this just may be a funding protocol thing I don't understand, but the lead people, Mark Aber and Nathan Todd, are being paid in the summer, and then the graduate students are being paid longer in the year. Does that correspond to who's teaching when? I mean, is it 11 months where graduate students are running this, or is this just and in the summer there's training them? Or I didn't understand why the funding was split quite like that. It's on page 9 and 10 is the explanation, but I just couldn't quite understand it anyway. That'd be great. Thank you.
Hi everyone, I'm Mark Aber. I'm co-PI with my colleague Nicole Allen on this project. And your question, we work as a team with several graduate students, and we're involved from the start of the contract till the end. Our time is distributed across the full calendar year, but we're paid in the summer because that's the way the U of I will allow us to be compensated for work that is not, paid for by the U of I. So it's an accounting device to compensate us for time that we have invested over the course of the year.
Okay, thank you. I suspected that, but because we've heard presentations from you that sounded like you were involved across the whole spectrum of time, but it it just looked odd. So thanks.
Yeah, and to if I could speak just for a second to the question that was raised earlier about, continuing efforts with the programs. Last year was our first year where we targeted programs that had already been targeted partners in a previous year for continued work. The reason we did that was just along the lines of the intent, I think, of the question. And that was that, it takes about a year for the programs to develop a logic model, to develop a measurement strategy, to figure out what the questions are that they want to ask and how they're going to collect data to answer those questions. And by the time that has happened, they often have not gotten very far in actually implementing their strategy for data collection. And new issues arise when they do that. They, how to store the data, how to analyze it, how to present it. And so we started last year working with programs that we had already worked with in the past to continue to support them. So that's one strategy to address the question you asked. And the second is that we had this past year have also developed some what we're calling data workshops. Workshops that sort of just try to help people understand how to think about data and how to manage it, store it, analyze it, and report it. And those have been going very well. We'll continue that work in the next year too. So just to give a little more detail to what Julian had said.
Thank you.
Sure, thank you for the question.
Yes, go ahead.
This morning, the Developmental Disabilities Board considered this proposal and they approved the share that's proposed.
Okay.
Similar questions.
Here, go ahead.
I'm going to read what's
yeah, please,
five, is that right?
Yes.
I move to accept the University of Illinois Capacity Building Evaluation Year 7 proposal and authorize the Executive Director to enter into a contract with the University of Illinois at the cost of $83,625, contingent upon the Champaign County Developmental Disability Board participation, offsetting the contract amount by $35,248.
I'll second the motion.
Stephanie?
Blaine Valencia?
Yes.
Kyle Patterson?
Yes.
Julian Rappaport?
Yes.
John Paul Joachim?
Yes.
Susan Fowler?
Yes.
Matt Hausman?
Yes.
Joe Omosagie?
Yes.
Thank you.
Next, page 14.
So this is a discussion item, mm-hmm. and it could go on and on and on forever because I love it so much, and I would love to hear from everybody a lot about it, but you get to set the parameters.
Okay. We could discuss, not on and on and on.
Or people can send me subsequent ideas.
Not at 11 o'clock at night.
That's okay.
So, what do you think?
Go ahead, Lynn.
I was just going to say that what I did was I collected the current priorities and listed everything that we funded under those priorities that we decisions that you just made 2 months ago. And just the priority category descriptions, not the rest of that memo. So especially for Matt, if you'd like to see the context for that memo, I could send it to you. Then I listed the current three-year plan goals with the objectives for this year, just so that you can see where we're at. The Mental Health Board is required by statute to do a new three-year plan every 3 years and to review the goals and funding priorities once a year. So that's the purpose of setting the stage. You may find lots of opportunity for change in here. The there are charts that follow that Mark Driscoll created that are so lovely that I updated them. It was hard to face how much I don't know about using Excel and even Word, but I made it through. And I saw, like, you know, this is one value for keeping the priority categories roughly the same, is that you can compare across the years. However, you might find that you want to change them radically. So I'd be interested in that kind of input from y'all, because in September, we will bring you a community needs assessment report, plus a first draft of the three-year plan, and maybe a first draft of priorities as well. But I did think, you know, in some ways that priorities, these major categories that you have, one is the DD investment, whatever you choose to do with that each year, it's a collaboration with the new board, so it doesn't really change. But the other three really do sort of feel like, you know, crisis, the sort of most expensive needs to be available to everyone, category of service, and then treatment, which can also be expensive per person, but there's a wide variety, or access to treatment, like all the benefits enrollment and case managers help people access things that they're entitled to under other payers. And then the third category, the system of care category, tends to have a lot of prevention and health promotion and a real focus on younger people. So, I mean, maybe those broad categories still suit us. So I just wanted to present them to you all in this one document for your consideration. And then another attachment is the work that Matt is relatively new to the board, so he didn't participate in this, but everybody else was involved with our first logic model. We got a logic model support from the U of I evaluation capacity team this year. And it is presented in two different versions, but it's the same. It's basically the same logic model, just one has fewer arrows and maybe fewer words too. And then the I plan, the community friendly version of the I plan is Xerox in your board packet and also available to you there in that beautiful format. I want to acknowledge I have received a number of comments about some of the content, very similar concerns to the ones that you raised this morning. And just to share with you that this is what the public health district has to do to meet their own statute. And the difference this time is that they had a number of other organizations in Vermilion and Champaign County who share that obligation to do a health needs assessment and a health plan periodically. We all worked on it together, but it was still led by the public health department. They used their tried and true processes and focus groups and surveys, and they did it at the worst possible time in the history of ever, which was March of 2020. So, I think it was very frustrating for them. And hi, Daphne is here.
I'm here. I don't know how to get in or where to go. I'm sorry.
You're in. No, she's in the building.
Physically here?
Building.
Oh, well.
Okay, thank you.
We'll find you.
We'll find you.
Thank you.
Oh, that's good. So she's here.
Yes.
She's okay. Well, so anyway, that's all I wanted.
Yeah. I guess you maybe haven't had time to think about it, but this in the paper this morning, there was this $4 million grant that for to Rosecrans, right, for behavior, crisis response and so on. So that's going to impact all this, I would think, somehow.
It ought to.
So that's not been public until now that I know of.
It's a good article.
Exactly some of what we had talked about in the past, the importance of sending out mental health responders to 911 calls, either as co-responders or as a follow-up. And so, that was exactly one of the things I thought we should get more information about, but it's $4 million and it's for several years.
Is it a state grant or a federal?
I think it was federal.
So this was an unusual opportunity that they took advantage of. It's great. And I was waiting for them to
be sorry.
Also, just released guidance on what the three components of every community's crisis care should look like. So I shared that with Gail Rainey, who's the interim director at Rosecrans right now, and she mentioned also having a state grant. So I think that it might be good to have them come and speak to us about what these two different grants will mean for crisis care in this community. We sure have waited a long time.
Yeah, that's always been an issue under the crisis response.
Yes.
And that's where we have the least amount, well, sometimes the least amount of funding.
It's the state and federal safety net commitments sort of keep us out of funding that, because it's supposed to be covered under Medicaid. But some of the really most helpful programs are underutilized. Like I think I sent you the ACT and CST are both listed on the state's initial plan for what to do with their small bump in Medicaid funding that they get for 1 year. So yay for putting the right things in the list, but the amounts of money for them are so small. So maybe this is just perfect news for us. Yeah. Thank you for mentioning that. That's great.
Occasionally worth reading the local paper.
I've not seen the local paper in a while.
And then, you know, obviously, like I had spoken with Lynn about this earlier, the limitations of the community health improvement plan obviously go to the limitations of the surveying, because if you look at the demographics of who they were able to get in contact with, it was majority white females.
And highly educated.
Yeah, exactly. And so it left out a lot of the people of color, like in our county, are, when I looked it up, I think it's about 15% are African American, and we only have 5%, about 6% are Hispanic, only got 12%, and about 10% are Asian. And so, you know, we're definitely missing, that might be just champagne, but we're definitely missing a good portion of the population that we were unable to reach, and obviously only 13% are males. So, you know, the concerns are basically limited to that subset. Predominantly, so it's harder to know what the other groups or demographics are concerned about. So you know, it's harder to look more in depth into this information as a whole community about what their concerns are. It's more about one demographic, unfortunately. Hopefully, is this going to be done next year as well? Then or.
So that they did this in 2020 and they'll start it again next year with a,
okay.
So the whole timeline is shifting right now because Carl and OSF need it to be a little bit earlier. So public health is willing to do that. So they will be starting again next year.
Sure.
So it's a little quicker timeline. So our timing is off completely. We're doing a specific needs assessment for, you know, community needs assessment related to mental health, addiction, and TB. Right now, and Leon and Kim have developed a survey with a focus group. And when you mentioned this morning's paper, I thought you were going to mention the letter to the editor.
Oh,
which was lovely. And that lady is in our focus group, the advisory group. And that group has given us some really great themes to explore and feedback on the survey. Survey response is a huge issue. It's really a tough one. There's almost no way around, like, you've got to spend a lot of money for a small return on your investment. But so we left some questions open-ended because when we did this in 2018, we pushed that survey out really broadly and got very low return rate. But the best stuff was the comments. So we thought, well, if we're just going to have a few coming back, let's get really good quotes. Let's find out what's on people's minds, really. So,
and the only other thing I didn't see on here is demographic on age breakup. So I know typically for surveys, it's harder to get younger people to respond. It's like, I know typically when they do like polling on it, on like politics and stuff, it's usually harder to get younger demographics because they usually do like call them like landlines and things like that. And so oftentimes those get skewed in that way as well. So I'm not sure if this is skewed based on age as well, if it's more older populations than the younger demographics. So yeah.
We have to push that up pretty soon. So we might be asking for some advice on where to take it and we take in paper copies directly to people that we want to hear from, and then we, you know, give them a sandwich too or something.
Yeah. I would always fix it.
Free Starbucks card or something. Yeah. How was the survey?
This is the public health district use their method, which they do every 3 years. I wasn't involved in it until they were done. Well, I was involved. I didn't do any of this with them. They used focus groups, and then I think they ended up having to do their surveys by phone primarily. And this was like the month of least access to anyone. And I think that, you know, troubles them too. So maybe that's why they were so willing to shift their online forward for soon. There's also, they traditionally do a really big public input session and try to get people from, you know, all sectors of local government and community representatives into one room. So I don't know how they'll manage that because they rely on that kind of input for each 3 years. The next discussion item is really doozy. It is difficult to read in this book, in the online packet, but we have an obligation to share the information that was, especially the realtor, the information that's. Some of it's not as long as you start.
Yeah. So I'd like to start with a couple of questions, and that is proposed prices were provided by two of the realtors. The other one left it open-ended. And so one home on Inglewood ranged from $224 to $249, and the home on Royal Oak ranged from $239 to $250. And so we know we're somewhere in the low 200s to mid 200s. And I wanted to just put it within a context of what did we originally purchase the homes for? How much money did we put into the ADA redesign?
I have to go back to the office to get that. I did work all of that out.
Well, roughly, I don't need to be precise, but okay, you have a sense.
So roughly, the mortgage itself does appear to include those all of the changes that needed to be made to get these homes to meet the SILA standards are very high. So
right.
Both the yards had to be torn up and new sprinkler systems installed in order to meet the fire codes, the particular fire codes for SILAs. And then the Englewood home is fully accessible and a lot of work went into that. It appears that the mortgage covered all of that. So I have a different version of the budget where I put a bunch of notes.
That's okay. So I'm kind of getting at,
yeah,
how much did we invest originally and what do we expect if we were to put them on the market?
So if you were to sell them, one realtor's fairly optimistic estimates look to me more, so that realtor actually knows the houses and has been involved with the houses
but
for a long time.
Managed the houses.
Right, so I
was Ward, I think.
Yeah, so it's not just optimistic, it's like actually being in those houses all the time. That would get the boards, if you take what he thinks that you could get and subtract out the closing costs and his costs, and subtract out, there's about $6,000 in the fund that doesn't have really anything to do with homes. It's a designated trust for one individual, and they probably use it all up. So you take $6,000 out of that and add in the money that's available in the fund balance right now, and money that's in a checking account that's used to pay for operating costs, like the maintenance of the house. The boards would split about $603,000 from the sale of the two houses. That's what would be available. So the question is, what could you do with $301,000? Compared to what it looks like if you kept the houses empty, the most that, and I'd never heard back from insurance other than that the insurance would go up. So I made a big increase estimate. And then I put in $14,000 that you might not actually have to spend, but if something went wrong with the houses that wasn't covered under insurance, the most that you would spend in a year on empty houses would be about $30,000. So I think those are the two boundaries that you were looking for. Hopefully the question about what you actually have spent on the homes, I can't answer right now. I don't have that memorized, but I do have it on my desk. I just
wanted to about estimate because, you know, we may be based, we aren't making a decision necessarily at the moment, but I remember how difficult the decision was to go forward and buy what at the time what we thought might end up being 4 homes. We ended up buying 2 because of the expense. And then, you know, it appeared very successful for the first 4, 4.5, 5 years. And then we had the crisis related to staffing and COVID and other things. And now they're empty. And according to Kim, it's very hard to find another agency to step in and provide the staffing. So that leaves us in a lurch if we can't use the homes as intended to provide housing for individuals with disabilities who are languishing wherever they're languishing. And that was the motivation for actually getting into this. But so it's going to be really important, I think, regardless of what we decide, that we have a pretty good report on the rationale behind why we bought it, what we spent in setting it up, you know, what happened socially that resulted in the loss of staffing in an agency, and if we keep the houses, what we think the prospect is for the future, if we sell the houses, what we think should be considered also in the future, because the housing shortage isn't going away. And it may be that the lesson learned is we shouldn't buy houses. I don't know. The story isn't finished yet, but I'm feeling a need for the information so we can put it into context.
Okay. Well, I guess we tried to provide several briefing memos over the last year as we've moved through this.
Yeah.
So we could just grab the last one of those and update it with this sort of like what we've learned from the realtor bids. The appraisals also, there is a concern about one of the appraisals that does seem to miss what a lot of other people see of the value of that house, which is that it's fully accessible.
Yes.
So, like, because the appraisal might be
wonky,
wrong, or we're missing that point, or maybe there's some damage in that house that we need to attend to. You know, that's why we asked for 2 different bids, so that we could also entertain the option of selling one house and then improving that house. But, you know, like on Friday, someone walked into the office and told Leon she wanted to buy one of the houses to use as a Scylla for her son. And, you know, great. Great. I mean, that's fantastic. Like, if you were going to sell the house, can you imagine like a better condition, right? Except that they would have on staff. So, you know, I think there is some wisdom in considering just keeping the houses empty, but the changes in DD funding at the state level are so minor, even with this little bump this year. And the director of the division of DD told us that she has a huge budget hole next year, because these increases don't last. So unless there's a bigger increase that's for 10 years, we don't expect a lot of providers of SIL services to come back to either to expand, because everyone we talked to was decreasing their SIL capacity instead of taking on more. Maybe the temporary bump right now will keep more people from going out of business. That's my hope. But, you know, maybe there's maybe hold the houses, hold on this decision for a while to see what happens if anything else changes in the field. But meanwhile, you know, it's interesting when people just show up and say they want to buy that house to be a SILA because that is the real value. We spent a lot of time and money getting those up to the very high standards for SILA here.
Right, and I'm not saying we shouldn't have done it or anything like right. that. I'm just kind of wanting a good, fulsome record of what we did, why we did it, and then the end is still to be written.
Yeah.
And we're not making a decision today. This is a discussion.
Yeah.
Correct. And so that's what I was hoping
yeah, I think
to be able to have.
Good job.
And I think, you know, that's a really good point because if we do end up selling the SILAs, the homes, and we decide for some future, the developer decides they want to, you know, go on this endeavor again in the future, for if say for some reason the funding does go up for them to be able to hire staff, it would be good to know, instead of having to reinvent the wheel, kind of knowing, you know, what happened the last time, how much is this going to cost, how much should we put in. But even if we don't, you know, make a profit or break even, the one thing we have to realize is that there was a cost that we invested in to provide this care. So yes. it wasn't a profit making endeavor,
no.
right?
And we did provide care for
and that's great for those 4 or 5 years that we did. And we can kind of then see how much did we spend each year, and that makes it on the cost that it costed us as a group, as a board.
Is that, I'm having a hard time finding that budget document, but it is in here. It's supposed to be.
I think it's easy to get lost with the number
yeah.
of pages.
Yeah, no, it's a page.
No,
Julie has to say that I'm looking forward to having a discussion with the DD board.
Yeah,
you too. But because to me, the issue isn't just dollars. That is, I think, I'm not sure, I'm not hearing every number that you just said before, but I'm guessing that the dollar amount that we're going to get back when we sell, what are we going to do with the money? Okay, well, we might use it for something, we might not, but the question we have to address is whether or not that's short-sighted.
There's still a
to discard
yeah.
this sometimes quite difficult to create setting. On the possibility, which of course nobody knows exactly, but there is a possibility that opportunities to use that setting could occur again quite soon. I mean, and to make something like that, which is fits ideologically with what we have always wanted, seems to me that we should very cautiously weigh the costs and benefits of actually discarding a resource very carefully, and it should be, yes, dollars should be a part of it, but not the whole story. So I feel like I would like to hear a conversation with the DD board, so I'm looking forward to next week to address those kinds of questions.
Okay. That budget is on page 188, so that shows you what was spent each year and in what category. Even the categories are sort of opaque. It was a little bit hard for me to figure it out. I needed Chris Winston's help for that, so I may not be able to answer all the questions, but that's page 188. Yay. That final document right after that is a draft of an RFP. If you were to say, let's find another SILA provider, this is what an RFP could look like. And I decided to include this because every time we talk about this, other ideas for a similar purpose come up. So the RFP could go in a different direction. If you wanted to keep the houses and do something different with them, and if that's what happens as a result of next week's meeting, or if it takes a while to come up with something like that, we would need to do some kind of RFP, and this is sort of the structure that we would start with. This was Deb Busey from, you know, who worked here at the county for 35 years and had a lot of experience with RFPs, put the original one together, and then I got some support for this modified draft RFP from Dan Walsh, who is our attorney, who also has a great deal of experience with county RFPs. So within these parameters, you could do other things.
And it's true that you didn't get any agency to respond to the request for proposals?
We didn't issue.
Oh, you never did issue one.
We did. We issued one in 2014 and had three proposals, and one was a for-profit organization with a history of allegations and right. findings of abuse, neglect, and death. So we passed. It was down to two nonprofits. So Kim just started talking to, and actually a board member from the DD board also talked to a number of SIL providers in this area in a larger region. And finally, we went and started talking to people in the Chicago area, and no one wants to come.
So we haven't done it. This last one was the first one.
2014 was the last
okay,
one.
Okay, I was confused about that. I apologize. Yeah.
No, we've just been,
conversations haven't produced anything.
Yeah, we've just been, you know, asking people about their 2 years ago, I think, or a year and a half ago, there was actually interest by a provider that's not very far away from Shanghai, who was considering doing this. But then COVID affected them too. And they also discovered that it's very hard to hire staff in this area. I think it must be cost of living difference. It makes it much harder in this area than, I mean, they're just in the counties outside of us, not having as much trouble or not. I mean, they haven't tried to get staff here, but their impression is that. So we asked the state, why don't we have enhanced rates like right. Springfield does or like Chicago does? They don't answer. They send us to a chart that's sort of like embedded in other public documents, and it's very hard to understand. We, for some reason, we are not getting the same kind of enhanced rates that others with higher possibility do.
So just, I want to make sure I understand. So this draft, and what Susan was just talking about, that and what the past conversations, that's mm-hmm. been for SILA purposes that traditionally the House is probably. And then if we're, when we're talking about, like what Daphne mentioned at the last meeting, with other uses possible, but so House will still keep them, but some different type. It would, you know, this, there would still be this similar type of RFP. Okay.
And I think the most important thing to notice in there is like a sequence of public meetings that are required to make, you know, to post and then open RFPs and then committee, and then the committee presents the awards. This would take 5 months to do. I could work with Dan and make something shorter, but we've stopped here.
Was there any conversation by the DD board this morning? And did they receive this information? And are they waiting to talk with us next week also? Okay. I mean, I don't mind putting it off when we're all together, because it was the DD board that was so, you know, very, very passionate about it, because there were so many families in distress.
Yeah, John.
The only other thing, just to kind of close out the audience of it all, it looked like the ward, the second one, had lower closing costs and total costs and had a higher appraisal for listing the property. So if this does end up proceeding, I think the second choice would be the best choice of the first two. The third one, obviously, it's harder to know. With the market the way it is, I would go with a higher listing, not a lower one. If it doesn't sell, honestly, I would not mind it. That's not selling it. So I think that's fine with me. And as we say, you know, the opportunity comes in the future, because it doesn't sell. If we decide to keep this for a year, I think that's, you know, discussion to have with the DD board, just to kind of see if any opportunities arise as the pandemic, hopefully as the pandemic improves, but we'll see. I think just based on the dollars and cents, I think the second one will be the one I would go with if in the future.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any questions or comments?
For a year, do we need to redo the appraisal? Market changes, but in terms of the realtors' bids,
if we waited,
we can update. Obviously, that would be open to everybody again, or just these.
I'm not sure. that's a good question.
Yeah, because usually if things don't sell, normally if you were selling a house, you would reduce the price, or if the market changes, you might increase the price.
Or you change realtors.
Yeah. Because the longer you home stay on the market, usually...
And then if you let them bank it for a year and not for sale.
Yeah.
And then...
I'll have to reassess the reappraisal. I think we'd have to.
Well, I'm pretty sure. It's, I mean, maybe, and it's just a great question to ask the attorney, but maybe you could choose a realtor and create a contract for, you know, with, if we sell it within 2 or 3 years or something like that. We would go with you. I don't know. That's.
I'm relieved we don't have to do anything today.
Down the road.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Your agency information. Do we have any agency information?
Does anybody on the Zoom want to give input? Agency input?
Okay. So, Rosecrans, do you have anything that you would like to say today?
Given the new award?
Yeah.
We're sort of interested in agents from Gail Rainey.
So... Hi, Lynn. It's Gail. The reason for the silence is we're still waiting on some of the details to come our way. Some of it's due to the federal grant award, and then some of it is also due to the state. We literally just got an email from the state telling us that there's a change to some of the 590 funding as well. So if you would allow us some extra time to be able to get a better outlook for you on what this is going to look like, we'd really appreciate it, because the information is coming at us fast and furious right now, and we don't have all of the details yet for both of the grants together. I hope that makes sense.
It does. Thank you.
There are a few other agencies present.
If there are no more participation, we'll move on with old business. As we inclusion, keep it against.
Why did it take me to come? It's 221. So this is related to the flyers. Chandra also printed these for us. This is her memo explaining that project. And then Stephanie has been coordinating the art. We just alluded to it. This just to keep you up to date with what's going on, because the festival is scheduled for the 8th of September, and we won't see you again until after that. So I'll just try to send email updates at 11 at night.
One data for some reason. It's 23.
Service is unavailable.
how it's been in previous years, but it seems like a lot of the services is for housing. So obviously when the eviction moratorium is probably coming to an end, it's probably going to get worse.
Yeah. I guess as we have seen around town, lots of people in those situations, lots of street corners, we see evidence of people without homes, without shelter.
This is a comment. I just always feel like we see so much housing being built around campus, yeah. And I always hear comments and anecdotally that a lot of it is not as occupied as it you would expect it to be, but as much as they're building, and yet we have a housing crisis, like for people not being able to have a house, like a housing affordability crisis. Mm-hmm. Your community that has an abundance of housing seems kind of. Ironic.
Well, check out the rents.
Yeah, which is, but then if the vacancy is low, it's, you know, I don't know what to say. Like, I'm kind of speechless about it.
Yeah.
Well, and you can see the foreclosures. I'm a great reader of the newspaper. And once a week, you look at the business, the one ad section, see how many foreclosures there are. And I take notices because taxes weren't paid. It looks like more to me than it used to, but I can't prove that.
As an aside, I was on a 1-hour Zoom training this morning from the Illinois Developmental Disabilities Council at the National Disability Institute, and was on housing specific to Illinois. And the cost that, or the salary that one would need to make to afford a 2-bedroom apartment is now up to $21 an hour, which is well above the proposed minimum wage of 15. So, and that's specific to Illinois, and it's an average. So obviously lower in Cairo than it would be in Bolingbrook, but but I assume that the 211 report just continues to show how important it is to have the 211 number and the collaboration among agencies.
And it was really interesting to see the change in the, like right after the pandemic started last year, the change in the 211 calls and telephone call and volume call. That was really interesting. It will be very interesting to see what happens after this moratorium is, or are there moratoria? Whatever, like soon things are going, possibly going to really go well for 211. And Lisa is sitting right behind you, and it's like quite the expert on these services and supports. Shaking and nodding. Thank you, Lisa.
I will just say, Champaign County is very lucky. We have a direct Department of Treasury grant to provide rent assistance. Statewide opportunity, we did have the opportunity to have that fund, those funds come directly to our community, and we were able to make decisions about how we administer those funds. So I think that's been a wonderful thing that we can also provide utility assistance for doing that. We continue to provide that service. I also think that things will increase. We are not seeing the volume of people applying for the services right now that I would expect, but I think it will increase once that moratorium lifts. But we're staffed up, we're ready, and we'll continue to provide the assistance.
Thank you. Schedules and allocations of 231 to 235.
There aren't any real changes from last time.
No.
Kind of standard fare.
It's looking at the same 2022 is. Yeah.
We've tried to include all of the agency deadlines in this document too, because, you know, we're just finding any way that we can remind agencies of deadlines in advance. Good.
Yep.
So do we have any more CCD information?
No, we met, you know, this morning with roughly the same agenda.
Okay. Approval for the CCMHB meeting, 236-241.
I move to approve the minutes for June 23rd.
Second the motion.
Yes.
Julie Rappaport?
Yes.
John Paul Yuking?
Yes.
Susan Fowler?
Yes.
Matt Hausman?
Yes.
Matthew Maurer?
Yes.
Elaine Valencia?
Yes.
Kyle Patterson?
Yes.
Joe Omosagi.
Yes. The staff reports are embedded here. If you have any questions?
Clearly, the staff are very busy.
Yes.
It's really helpful to see their reports and know what's going on.
Yes.
There's been a lot of collaboration too. I'm impressed with how much we stay in touch, even though we don't see each other every day.
So. I hope criminal justice, mental health, reiterate that in the community, and hopefully get a good list of landlords that will take the housing vouchers. That'll be a good resource for people in the community here. Do we know if MTD is going to extend that repair after August?
I don't know what to do, so.
I know, I've been wondering that myself, because I thought I had read in the paper that I thought I saw somewhere that it was expired.
Yeah, it looks like August 15th, which is like the start of school. And a lot of families are.
Well, as someone who has a dash pass, we got notification to renew it. My son has a disability. He's been riding free because it is free, but you have to go in and get recertified for the dash pass. So I think it is ending.
Thank you.
Well,
it says it on 244 in Leon's report on top. It says that it's going to end August 15th.
It's also great to see that the budget's at 50% and 50% almost, you know, 50-50 revenue and expenditure.
No, that's good.
It's great.
The treasurer was on our call for a minute. I think she's gone, but, you know, they did get those first distribution and second distribution of them pretty fast.
Yeah.
So, yay. Less stress.
Announcements.
Oh, do they? It's in the
church.
I know. You're racing time.
Yeah. 253-6265.
We need a motion to approve the clerk's report. I move to approve the expenditure list from pages 253 to 265.
Susan Mellon?
Yes.
Matt Hausman?
Yes.
Catherine Mellon?
Yes.
Elaine Valencia?
Yes.
Kyle Patterson?
Yes.
Julian Rappaport?
Yes.
John Paul Yulkin?
Yes.
Joe Omosagi?
Yes.
This is going to be tricky. You, I guess you. Board announcements.
Yeah, board
announcements.
Okay. So, order business. So, we normally do a closed session.
So, what we're going to do.
Kyle.
Well, so Kyle is on there. So, we need to make this motion to go into a closed session, and then I'm going to stop the recording. What I'm trying to do is Kyle can attend. He can, like, I can stop the recording and Kyle can still hear us and participate in the discussion, but the other participants would
Lynn,
also be,
could you just put me on speakerphone? Do you think that would work? Like if I called your phone?
Isn't that how you record it?
I'm going to record it there too, but can I do both?
Okay.
I'm going to. Thank you, Lisa. Okay. So, yeah, let's try that. And that way I can mute what we're doing here so that. Good idea.
The motion to move for the closed session.
I move that we move into closed session pursuant to whatever. There used to be language we had to read. It's not here though.
It's in the other packet here.
Okay. I'm move the board to an executive session exception 5 ILCS 120/2C11 of the Open Meetings Act. That's what I couldn't remember. To review status of minutes of prior closed session meetings, and that the following individuals remain present: members of the Champaign County Mental Health Board, Executive Director Canfield, and Operations and Compliance Coordinator Howard Gallo.
Seconded.
Matt Hausman seconded?
Yeah.
And roll call.
Susan Fallon?
Yes.
Matt Hausman?
Yes.
Kathy Mauer?
Yes.
Elaine Valencia?
Yes.
Kyle Patterson?
Yes.
Julian Rappaport?
Yes.
John Paul Yulkin?
Yes.
Joe Omosagi?
Yes.
And then I'm going to stop the recording with this.
Oh, you've got it open. Do you
want
to
read
the motion to accept?
Yeah. I'll move to accept the closed session minutes as presented, or as revised to continue maintaining that that's closed.
I second the motion.
Elaine Valencia?
Yes.
Kyle Patterson?
Yes.
Julian Rappaport?
Yes.
John Paul Yulkin?
Yes.
Susan Fowler?
Yes.
Ben Hausman?
Yes.
Kathy Mauer?
Yes.
Joe Omosagi?
Yes.
What's left is to adjourn.
Okay.
Julie, would you like to move to adjourn?
I would move that we adjourn. So I can make it.
Thank you. Unanimous group.
All in favor.
Thank you so much.
So when you say you're done.
Yeah.
It's nice to see you guys in
Yeah, I know.
You actually exist from here down.
I know.
Yeah.
Joe, you got legs.
Yes, I did. Yes, I do.
All this time, I thought they were part of the TV show.
Okay.
I had a face or only online. On the board.
We had audits
I'm not going to do it. 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 I